Good evening, everyone, and welcome. If you'd like to come forward and sit somewhere comfortable for you, bring your tea and coffee with you if you want to. Have some more if you want to. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Don't be too Presbyterian and sit up the back. Well, you all deserve gold medals for coming on a night like this. But at least it's warm in here. So you're all very, very welcome to this gender identity night. For want of, tried to think of a fancy title for the night. Then we decided it was about gender identity, so let's just call it that. So we did. I'm Susan Jones. I'm the minister here at St Andrews on the Terrace. And we've been on a bit of a journey in that many of you will know that this church has been an advocate for gay and lesbian issues for a long time under my predecessor, Margaret Maiman. And that's good, and we'll continue to do that. But we kind of had a bit of a wake-up call in about the last year that the rainbow covers sexual orientation and gender identity. And the two are quite different, we're discovering. And so we're on a learning curve here at St Andrews. And we figured that if we were on a learning curve, probably other people were too. So this is an opportunity to listen and be informed and to hear stories and to learn new things together. So you're very, very welcome. And we're just blown away by the support that we've had from groups that are working with gender issues in the community, as you'll see later. I need to turn into an Air New Zealand hostess and tell you that the fire exits are at the back of the church and on either side. There is no strip lighting up the front. I will approximately know what to tell you to do. So if there's a fire, obviously we need to get out of the building and we gather in the car park. And if there's an earthquake, we stay in the building and duck, cover and hold. The loos, it's a bit late to tell you this now, but the loos are over there. So the most less embarrassing way to access the loos during the meeting is to go out the back door, round up the alleyway, and find them through the centre foyer. If you want to go out that way, you can. I admire your confidence if you choose to do so. Also, we're going to record tonight because several people who can't come or who have relatives elsewhere who have said they would like to know what we talk about tonight. So we're going to record tonight. So when we get to the questions, if you don't want your voice recorded as asking a question, I've got some papers here for you to write your question down and we can read it out. Or you can just tell Peter afterwards which question you asked, and he can take your voice out of the recording if you prefer that, just so that everyone is free to ask the questions that they want to ask. Okay. Marnie Mitchell is here in the middle of the set of chairs, and I'm going to join her. And
Alia.
Hi, Alia. How are you? I should have asked your name earlier, shouldn't I? Because I'm sitting here as the novice. My story is that some years ago, quite a lot of years ago, at the beginning of the 2000s, I was in Christchurch and met a retired gentleman who was dressing as a woman sometimes. The first time I noticed was in a church meeting that he was leading, and I noticed he was wearing nail polish. And I was quite in the setting of the church, which isn't renowned, unfortunately, for its welcoming and inclusivity. I was worried for him because the meeting was in a very conservative church area. But later he and I talked, and he said somewhat defiantly, "What would Knox Church, Christchurch, which is where I was working at the time, think if I turned up?" I said, "Well, you should come and see." So he came first of all with his wife and then on his own. And it was an interesting first experience for me, and it was, I first met through him people from Agenda, and we have someone from Agenda as a group tonight. And I've called him he, because he seemed to be a man who was dressing as a woman. Later, I realised I needed to be a whole lot more careful with my pronouns. And I didn't know enough to ask him what he would prefer. And I didn't always get it right later either. And so I went through agonies of embarrassment at knowing what to say and how to create my sentences if I wasn't sure. And it seemed to me that there was a lot that I had to learn about what was going on. And the second kind of epiphany for me was, in fact, what I referred to before here at St Andrews, where I suddenly realised what a difference there was between sexual orientation and gender identity, and how the operating forces are quite different and have different outcomes. And because we might be fighting in the church, as we are at St Andrews within our own church, for gay and lesbian rights, there's a whole lot more work to be done. A whole lot more work to be done. So I relate to people who feel that their friends and acquaintances and workmates and family members are going through transitions that, as a cis person, I've learned I'm a cis person, only half, well, don't even understand. I was going to say half understand, but I don't think I can even claim that. And I identify with people like that. And the other thing that I have watched in groups is in the church, is, for instance, the grandparent or the aunt or the parent who has a loved member of their family going through a transition which they don't understand, and they don't know what to do about that. And they know that they should be supportive, and they kind of want to be supportive, but in fact their own grief at the loss of the grandson or the nephew or the daughter is something they don't have a place to deal with. They're wanting to be supportive, but there's this feeling about what they've lost as well as what they're gaining, and how do you process that? So that would be my three kind of my three stories. One was meeting John in Christchurch, the realisation here that the two areas of the rainbow are completely different, and I only half realised that, and also how could we perhaps as a church support parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends who are seeking to be supportive for people in transition. Transitions of various sorts too. That's another thing I'm learning. But that's what I'm struggling to learn and working hard at learning. But Marnie is going to talk to us now.
Kia ora whanau, and yes, just reiterate, thank you for your bravery in coming out on this stunning winter's night. I'm going to pass over to Alia in a moment, just so we can manage time. So yes, Marnie Bruce Mitchell, and I'll tell more of my story in a moment, just sort of keeping an eye on time, because I think if you let us off the leash, we could probably be here till 3 o'clock in the morning. There's so many stories. Alia. And thank you for jumping in and helping me out.
Kia ora. My name's Alia Winter. Like Marnie said, they just kind of roped me in last minute for this panel, so I'm a little bit underprepared, but yeah, I am here in a few different capacities tonight. So I volunteer for Inside Out Kōaro and also Gender Minorities Aotearoa. Cool. So I guess I've always been part of the queer community from when I was very young. I knew that I was different or whatever. That was definitely something that was always very obvious to me and was made very obvious to me by a lot of other people. And I've come out many times in my life. And I guess, yeah, that kind of started when I was at high school. And I didn't have any support, basically, when I was at high school, which made it very difficult, especially living in Palmerston North. But moving to Wellington was a godsend. And it wasn't until I moved to Wellington that I started to transition, and I found that there was more support here. It's sort of few and far between the places you can go, but there's definitely more resources, more people to talk to, more kind of clear pathways for transition. There was, you know, lots of ups and downs. It's a very vulnerable time in someone's life, I think, transitioning, especially for family transitioning. That was the difficult, most difficult thing for me, was dealing with family and their perceptions of me having to change and shift, even though for me it was like just instant, and that was who I'd always been. That's still an ongoing process. And equally, the kind of process of coming out is constant, something that never stops. So I'm always coming out to people like I did tonight. I think that's all I want to say.
Thank you, Ali. When Cece and I talked about doing this, I agree that I would organise a panel for tonight, this first part. But I've been working on the mental health inquiry and it completely slipped my mind. But that's perhaps a good place to start. So, as you know, New Zealand's, I think, very bravely conducting a mental health inquiry at the moment. And when you look at how they're doing it, I think it's interesting. So the question of what's working and then what do we need to do to fix it? And I don't think fixing is a very hard thing to do in terms of a concept, but it would be very hard to do as a country. So if we really want to change things, and it comes back to what you were talking about, Susan, in terms of a society that respects diversity, a society that's anchored in love, and then can go on a journey to create a world where every single person is valued and accepted, and we work together to grow that person's life and whatever shape it is. So let's honour for a moment, you know, what has already happened in this extraordinary building. So 19 years ago, I think it is 19 years ago, the Intersex Trust of Aotearoa held a concert in this church, and it was called Concert for Courage. And as far as I know, it was the first fundraising event in the world to raise money for the issue of intersex. So there's a wonderful history already in this extraordinary building. So you've got something pretty precious here that I think we can build on. And I think that concept of love needs to be anchored with bravery, because to sit beside somebody that is different from yourself or has a story that is unfamiliar does require courage. But I think if we stand in the shoes of loving acceptance and we're willing to listen, then we can move forward. So my journey is a very public one, and sometimes people are surprised by that. So the story I'm going to tell tonight is how that came to be. So My original training was as a teacher educator, and I was trained in the era when education philosophy was a very big part of our training, so I'm a passionate educator. And because of my own story, I moved sideways and into a profession which fitted me perfectly but seems like an odd match. I went from teacher educator into civil defence. Now, it was a time when unemployed people were given special projects to help you find employment. So my original job was to develop a resource kit for schools just here in the Wellington area. And it was picked up, the idea, by the then head of civil defence, Witta Gardner. And so he funded it as a national project. And it's interesting because I found myself working with men, most of whom were Vietnam vets, and I would now recognise as a counsellor therapist that most of us had PTSD. The guys from their war experience and me from my own childhood experience, both as a sexual abuse survivor and my experience as being an intersex person. So I worked very easily up in my head, and I was useless at emotion, just the same as the male colleagues I was working with. So it was as a result of working in civil defence that I got sent to America after the Loma Prieta earthquake, and something happened there that managed to break through my own armouring, and I experienced for the first time in my life emotions, which I had no idea what they were. I thought that I'd been affected by the earthquake, and I was pretty angry at myself because in those days I considered myself as tough as any of the guys. I came back and had the extraordinary, some of you will have seen my recent article in The Listener, so I came back and was connected with the wonderful Dr. Hetty Rodenberg, so an out lesbian who was working with the community. Hetty didn't know anything about intersex, but what she did know was a lot about trauma and working with trauma. She'd done a lot of work with in the early years of the HIV epidemic in New Zealand. So she'd been trained, had training from Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. So that's really, there's a period of 2 or 3 years when I did my really hard work. Now, we need to back up. So what is an intersex person? So an intersex person is someone who's born with variations of sex characteristics. In 1953, in New Zealand, we were still following a Victorian medical paradigm. So when I was first born, the paradigm that was being used was that of hermaphrodism. Completely never used that word with an intersex person. And I was originally identified as a male child, so I spent the first year of my life as a male with the name Bruce. And it's interesting because you stand back and you really start to think about, you know, what is gender, and when we're assigned gender, what does it mean? So at the end of that first year, I had an operation, a laparotomy. They looked inside, found that I had a uterus, and made the decision in a 24-hour period to reassign my gender as female. So my parents, who were conservative, kind, loving people who lived in remote rural New Zealand, one day had a son who was going to grow up to be, of course, an All Black. I was in the middle of the King Country, so I was going to be just like Colin Meads. And then and inherit the family farm, of course, because I was a male. 24 hours later, I would be somebody's wife. You know, that's the 1950s, rural New Zealand, gendering. So I grew up not knowing my own story. I grew up in a world where odd things happened to me in medical settings that we never talked about. So there's not time tonight to go into that. There is a film, and maybe one day we could show the film here. That might be a good way. So I'm going to blow up Susan's theory of there being two parts. There's really three parts to the rainbow flag. So absolutely, rainbow the original flag is really encapsulates sexual orientation, and we'll talk later about how that's really expanded in terms of concepts. And then we do have gender identity and gender expression, and it's really lovely seeing the trans flags in here. And if you get the latest version of the Yonka Kata principles, we now also include diverse sex characteristics, which is the intersex issue, and the colours of that are purple and yellow. So it's a yellow flag with a purple circle. So how are we going on time? We're just about on time. So yeah, a couple of stories from me and Liana. Thank you for yours. Liana, where did that come from? I'm tired. My apology.
That's really good. Thank you. I also, as I was listening, remembered Alison Mary West, who some people here will know. And Alison is now Alex West and living in Australia. And when I look back, I thought it was quite simple, you know, 1 minute this and then the next minute something else. And we had a service specially created to farewell Alison and welcome Alex. And it was really interesting, the people in the room who were friends and family, it was very clear to me that we were all at different stages of how we were relating to the change. Yeah. Thank you for that, Marnie. And Marnie talked about Gender Identity 101. It's interesting, isn't it, when there's a majority group and a minority group, the burden that is put on the minority group to keep on explaining themselves. And partly this is our attempt as a majority to educate ourselves, but of course we need to hear the stories from the minority in order for us to understand better. And so what, Marnie, would you want to say to a group of people you don't actually know everyone here, and we don't know why everyone's come. We'll all have come for completely different reasons, I would think, and with completely different backgrounds. But what are perhaps some of the frequently asked questions that you find yourself being asked?
I mean, in an ideal setting, we do whakawhanangatanga so that we would all know who is here in the room, and there's probably not time for that. So let's just we'll just hit the pause button for 2 minutes, so a minute each. Turn to the person next to you or across the chair and just introduce yourself. Don't say anything that you don't feel safe to say, but just share words for, well, just a minute each. All right, so I'm judging by the little buzz that some of you know each other and some this was a first meeting. So Susan was just saying that she knows about Quarter View, and Quarter View are new to this beautiful space. So again, welcome, welcome. So in terms of comments, the first thing that I would say, you were talking about as somebody is changing. And for the person, we're not changing at all. We are ourselves. And if you like, the inside, who we are, is becoming more visible. So when people talk to me about the grief process, I understand it completely. But the person isn't changing. And in fact, the person, if you choose to go on the journey with them, you are actually going to, for the first time ever, get to know the person who either has been hiding, which is often the case, or that very human process of learning who you are hasn't yet happened. So I'll use my own experience. So growing up, a cis person typically has who they are inside mirrored around them. So for you, it would have been your mum and aunties and next door neighbours. So that self, that being that you are, is reflected and mirrored around you. For me, that never happened, though I could see probably, not intellectually, at a cell level, parts of myself and my mum, but also parts of myself and my dad, though I would never have recognised it. So as a kid growing up, I was seen as a tomboy. That's what girls that didn't behave in feminine ways were called when I was growing up. My development of self did not happen until after I was 40. And it was an interesting process. It wasn't particularly difficult. It did take quite a long time. And for me, and it's interesting, I think something that we would share is our love of art. And for me, it was photographs that my dad took, because I had very poor childhood memories. Trauma had blanked a lot of that out. But my dad was a 35mm colour photographer. So I went back and looked at those slides and the photographs of myself, and I thought, this is really interesting. I was a kid who loved dressing up, but I would also go out with my dad, and I could drive the farm tractor by age 6 and was allowed to. You didn't have to worry about OSH and all sorts of things then. I tell friends that now and they're horrified. You were allowed to drive the tractor and you were 6? Yeah, by myself. But that unfolding, that development of self did not happen until I was 40. And when I was doing it, because I'm a non-binary person, I didn't even have language. I was stumbling trying to even find the words. So not only was I trying to pull self from inside out, I had no language to do it then. And I used to say to people, look, I'm like a cup of tea. The black tea is my female self and the male self is like milk, and you pour the two things together and it mixes up and you can't separate the tea and the milk. That was my first very clumsy attempt to try and describe what was inside. So I see myself as a non-binary person, and my gender pronouns are them, they. Which is interesting, because within the gender identity realm, we have people who see themselves and their lived reality is expressed through the binary, so as a man or a woman, and then there are people like me who don't. And if we go back and look at history, and I've bought a couple of fave books here, anyone who's really interested in this area, I would recommend sort of one of the early seminal works by Leslie Feinberg, who really looked at this area and went back into history. And what we recognise is being trans people forever, across all cultures and across all time. We happen to live in a period, I think, from the Victorian era, where there was regression, and the only safe places for people who didn't conform to that very narrow stereotype of what it was to be a man or a woman were places like circuses, which is interesting. But yeah, have a read of Leslie's incredible book. I would also reference that here in New Zealand, our tradition in terms of Māori culture, Elizabeth Kerekere's amazing book, Takatāpui, and recognise that gender is socially constructed. So from a Western narrative, we see it in that sort of binary, absolutist way. Though I like the fact that our young people are blowing that up, so keep going. But you cannot apply the Western narrative directly to notions or constructions of takatāpui or any of the gender constructions in the Pacific. So again, if you're interested, there's a whole world there to explore and start to understand. And then perhaps the other book that I would encourage people to read is our own, I say ours because it's a New Zealand publication, Assume Nothing by Rebecca Swan. And again, extraordinary photographs that really do explore and literally get under the skin of what gender is. And there are beautiful narratives in there of people's stories. So there is not a single narrative of how to be a trans person or what a trans person is. And what I would say is every single story and narrative is precious. And if you get the opportunity and privilege to sit beside someone and learn about them and support that, then, yeah, you're a lucky person. And I think what you're doing here tonight absolutely can grow that and grow our humanness, each of us. And if we're going to change things, that's where it will happen. So that's a very long answer to your simple question.
The other question that I have, I wondered if you would say for this audience, you came and talked to us at another Spirited Conversations up in the centre, and I think you picked up from us that we were quite keen to, you know, get it sorted. You know, we wanted some definitive answers about pronouns, for example, and we wanted to know who fitted in what box kind of thing. And you said something really important, I thought, about talking to the person. Can you expand on that?
So we can tie ourselves up in knots about what pronoun should I use and what name should I use. And it's actually really simple, and it would be the same if we were meeting somebody from a town that we didn't know or a new culture, and you start having a conversation and you ask the person, so I'm not sure what pronoun to use, what pronoun would you prefer, and I'm not even sure which name is the appropriate name to use at the moment, and you ask that person. And if you ask it in a gentle, loving way, the person will take it and generally give you the answer. So it's simple, but it becomes very complicated if we're trying to figure it out without asking the person for anything, actually. So, yeah, simple. Ask. And the second thing is assume nothing. So unless you've had that conversation, whatever is going on inside your head is probably wrong. It may not be, but check it out first.
Are you going to add anything?
No, I think you covered that.
Are you prepared to answer a question about what's been the most difficult and also the best thing, if you could give us one of both? In your experience, what's been a moment when in interacting with other people, what's been really difficult, but what's been a really special moment where it's really felt good to you?
So my most difficult would still be profoundly. So my parents had never talked to me. They didn't know how to talk to me, so I was trying to work things out. And the first thing that I worked out was believing that I was a lesbian, so a little bit off planet and wrong, but the first thing that I'd worked out, so I was really excited, and I rang them up to tell them, and both of them burst into tears. Now that's partly related also to my story and my parents believing that when I had childhood surgery that would fix me, and of course that didn't mean, it meant I was going to turn into a cis person, not into a queer person. But my parents' pain, yeah, and as I'm recalling it now, I can still palpably feel that inside me. It's what drives my activism, because that gulf, that terrible separation that existed there, they were good people. They were conservative people. They were good people, and there was a rift, a canyon that should never have been there, and that's really with my mahi, with my work, I want to change that. Human interaction is the most precious thing that any of us can experience. So things that tangle and get in the road of that are just so sad. I'm going to let you do worst story while I have thousands of good stories. I've got to pick one out.
I think the worst thing for me was because it doesn't really happen anymore, but when I kind of I appeared gender ambiguous for a long time, and it makes moving through public space very difficult. And I was sort of relentlessly harassed for about 4 to 5 years, and it was like pretty serious stuff. Like, I worked at a bar for a long time, and I would walk home and sometimes have to run home because there were people following me or asking me questions or stopping me in the street. And yeah, that went on for a long time, and it still continues now, just in a different way, because people usually perceive me as a cis woman and so feel entitled to take my time and energy. But yeah, that was definitely the most difficult thing for me, and I'm still sort of processing some of that stuff. Being in certain situations can induce a lot of anxiety, and I don't think that ever really goes away for trans people, or people who are not existing on the binary. And the best thing would just be self-actualization, I think, for myself. That's like the thing that comes off the top of my head. So just being able to feel like I'm in my body, I'm in myself, I'm my own person, because previous to that I had sort of completely felt like how people perceived me, and how, I mean, people were constantly policing my gender all the time. So it's nice to now not have that as much, or at least not in a very overt way that made it very difficult just to kind of exist.
Thank you. So I've picked one out of the bag, and it remains a very precious good memory. So it goes back probably 15 years ago. So I have a brother who's a very conservative religious person, and he struggles with who I am and the fact that I'm so out. So I was visiting the family, and he has 4 children. And my niece, who was about 12 at the time, was observing all this but not saying very much, and she went for a walk with me, and she gave me this giant hug, and she said, "Is it okay if I call you my uncle?" 12-year-old. And I thought, you know, often we think kids don't get it, but often it's the kids who absolutely get it. So she has called, she's now an adult with children of her own, and her kids delightfully call me their uncle without prompting. It's just gorgeous. And as a result of that, have their own narratives around gender and what it is to be a boy and a girl, and we haven't deliberately caused that to happen. It's just their own reflection. So it's amazing what happens when you open spaces, like things can grow and flourish.
Yeah. Listening to you both makes me realise that when I might approach someone or be talking to someone and ask about pronouns, and I might get a bit of a short answer. It's not surprising, is it? I mean, why should your gender be, you know, public, you know, a cause for public conversation? And in a sense, if I'm just meeting you for the first time, the fact that your gender is an issue between us, it just throws it up immediately, doesn't it? So that, in a sense, cis people need to kind of man up and woman up to getting a few sharp answers, you know, when we ask those questions, because there's a lot going on inside, as you say. There's a lot that we haven't seen inside you, and it's coming through, but the change is in us because we see a change, but it was always there. That's a really, yeah. Thank you for that insight. That's a really helpful insight. I mentioned earlier that first of all, is there anything else that either of you would like to add before we meet to the shed?
You've got to get somewhere.
Okay.
I'm right. Also a counsellor, so I keep...
You keep sharp time, okay. So one of the thrills of this getting this together was that I started asking one or two groups that I knew about if they would come and just say to you as a group who they were, what they did, say how you could get in contact with them, so that people became aware of the resources that were in the community. And I think we've got six. So I've done the Mission Impossible on them and told them they've got 3 to 5 minutes. And so you'll just get a taster tonight. But up the back on the two red-covered tables, there are two pieces of paper. One says St Andrew's email. And that is, you might like to give us your email to get our Friday night newsletter, because we do seek to be open and inclusive, and that would keep you informed about what's going on at our place. No strings, no attachments, just keep you informed. But the other one says email for resources, and so if you want written down what people have told tonight in terms of contact numbers and website addresses and things like that, we could send that to you in hard copy later. So think carefully which list you might want to put your email on. You won't necessarily want to put your email on both lists. So just to let you know, that's a possibility. So first of all, I wonder if I could ask Sharon. Where's Sharon? Sharon and I met at a select committee meeting. You can use this or the lectern. Which would you prefer? Censoring myself. And I was really thrilled to realise that there's a parents group that have got together through Facebook, and she'll tell you more about that.
Thank you. 3 minutes is a bit harsh, but I'll do my best. Yeah. So our story, or my story, started about 3.5 years ago, and at that point we thought we had two girls. One of which had come out as a lesbian and the other of which had come out as straight. And I mean that quite seriously, because that's the sort of family we are, that she felt the need to come out as straight. And then we were away on holiday and our oldest one said, you know, actually I'm bi-gender. And I thought, I have no idea what that is. I've heard of transgender. I wouldn't have the foggiest what bi-gender is. So Googled away and discovered what it was, and we had some conversations around that. And then he said, well, actually I'm transgender. I thought I might just start with bi-gender because that would be easier for you. And I'd have to say, I thought, actually not. I would have far rather you started with transgender, but that's okay. We'll go with that. And you know, whatever, we love you as you are, and just how can we help? And, you know, just coming back to what Marnie said, and, you know, so many of our parents, by the way, want to thank you for the work that you do, and others as well, because it really helps having you there. And what is really true is that it's still the same child, still the same person, you still love them, and when you are pregnant, you think, I just want to have a happy, healthy baby. So, you know, when did it change, and that I'll only love you if you are male or you're female, etc., in relation to that. So what I did was I thought, okay, well, there must be other people out there, there must be other resources, etc., and looked madly, and there was pretty much nothing. So what you might find is that the majority of support services actually start for the children when they're around about 14 and up. There's very little out there for parents, and there is probably even less for parents of children that are younger than that. So I was on another Facebook support group on another issue and happened to post to say, I really don't know how to deal with this, and found a couple of other people that had transgender kids as well in New Zealand. So I thought, okay, well, we might as well start a, you know, Facebook group between us. And there were five of us at the beginning, and we thought, oh, well, you know, that's probably about it. Never happened. There's only five of us in the whole of New Zealand. And so at the moment, because it's a nationwide support group, we've got about 220 families. And thank you. It's what's amazing is it's growing really, really quickly. So we're probably, last week we had five new families find us and join us, and some weeks it's less than that, sometimes it's more, but it does show there's actually a real need out there. What we're finding is that people need to connect online, and everyone goes through the same kind of journey, but they just want help and support and to know what to do to help their family. And then through that, sometimes they're connecting and actually meeting up face to face. And for the kids, it's all about, I'm not alone, I'm not the only one. And a number of them, particularly the younger ones, are saying, I thought I was the only one in the entire world. And we're there to say, actually, no, you're not, and it will be okay. And the first thing that we do with parents is say, it will be okay. All you need to do is love and support your child as you always have and listen to them, talk with them, be their advocate, be their strength as well. So our parents have children ranging from around about 2 years old up until adult. So there's a cluster probably around about 5 till 8 or 9, and then there's a teenage cluster as well. So, and this is quite common from what the research tells us. And the issues, the problems that are faced are to some extent the same and to some extent different, depending upon the age and the stage there. So what we do is we just provide a shared community. So it's about parents supporting parents. And, you know, sometimes parents need to vent. Sometimes they need to say, I have no idea who to go and talk to. There are certain decision points if you're wanting to look at any kind of medical treatment or transition. So we provide that kind of information because it's not easily accessible. The medical profession are generally not helpful. There are some parts of New Zealand where they're great. There are other parts where they are abysmal. And, you know, we're feeding into the mental health review because to access support for your child, they have to be part of, to get to an endocrinologist, they have to be part of the mental health system. They have to see a psychologist. They have to see a psychologist ideally before they hit puberty if they're young or as soon as possible if they're older than that. The trouble is that CAMHS won't accept your referral unless you have, you know, demonstrated high-risk, high-needs mental health services. So you actually need to be in crisis before you can get help for your child. You know, so that's one of the really big issues for us at the moment. More recently, we've also started moving into a bit more of an advocacy role because there's a need there. So Susan talked about the select committee. That's around how people can change their gender on their birth certificate. So the current amendment has, if you're over 18, it's easier. If you're under 18, it's go through a court process and the court will tell you what gender you will be and they will tell you what medical transition you have to have. And if you don't follow the prescription of the court, then they will change your gender back again. So we were advocating for that to be a self-declaration process, and end of July we'll get the report back from Select Committee and hopefully that will have been taken into account. We also recently have advocated for a family where someone complained to a rangatamariki that the parents were abusing their child by allowing them to live as their declared gender. So we met with a rangatamariki and pointed out to them that current psychological advice is it's actually abusive if you don't support the gender expression of your child, so that they needed to change their approaches pretty quickly. And that's something we're continuing to work with them around as well. The really big concern I have, and I don't know what we're all going to do about it, is we have 220 parents who have found us and who support their kids. Through my experiences with my own children and their networks of friends, there are an awful lot of people out there that don't have supportive families. And what my worry and concern about is the children and the teenagers that don't have parents who have reached out for support, and they are the ones that I think we really need to be trying to reach out to and support. So, yeah. So, thank you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much, Sharon. And so you know what she looks like now, and if you want the email to get hold of that group, then that's the woman. Marama has just come in. Perfect timing. Outer Spaces. Marama and I met recently over email, and she's going to bring her uncanny ability to speak.
Kia ora whānau. Great, I'll use the microphone. It's very clear, positive feedback, that. I loved it. I'll stand. Hello, everyone. So my name is Marama. My pronouns are she, her, and I am a super out takatāpui woman. I'm using all of those things to identify myself because it's really important that we start doing that, if possible, to make those of us who are a little bit different feel less different. So I run an organisation called Outer Spaces. Outer Spaces, I'm going to try and describe it to you in 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes. Outer Spaces is the umbrella An umbrella is a thing that people who don't live in Wellington use to shield themselves from rain. Outer Spaces is like an umbrella, and beneath that umbrella there are four and almost five different organisations. So that is Schools Out, Transform, Naming New Zealand, and the Wellington Binder Exchange. Would you like to know what each of those actually do? Okay, cool. Oh, the feedback is so good. So Schools Out, which is actually why I'm late, runs every week on a Tuesday in the CBD and on a Wednesday out in Lower Hutt. I would love for it to run in Upper Hutt, so if you have any connections up there, please do let me know. And Schools Out is a rainbow inclusive space for rangatahi, for young people between the ages of 12 and 18, to come along, hang out, participate in activities and just be themselves, have their pronouns respected, have their sexuality respected, have their lack of sexuality respected, just be respected and entertained and fed. Snacks are probably the most important thing. Next to respect, it's a bad joke, but I do really love snacks. So today, Schools Out, we picked a few different rainbow movies, and the young people chose to watch Debs. Has anyone seen Debs? Debs Academy? Hey, I see you in the back row there. They picked one, and we watched it, and we just ate popcorn and hung out and just chilled out. But other times we've had discussions about queer representation in the media. We've made rainbow Play-Doh, which the young people immediately pointed out that I should have just called Gay-Doh. I'm disappointed that I didn't come up with that pun. I can't be perfect, okay? So Schools Out is really, really cool, runs every week, and we are almost always looking for people who want to help and come up with ideas. So if you identify as part of the rainbow community and think you might be able to help, hello, come and talk to me. Transform is a super cool group, and that runs fortnightly. There's a clue in the title. No, it's not about robots. Transform is a fortnightly group that is specifically for the trans and gender diverse community. So our siblings who are trans or gender diverse, including non-binary and so on. So that's fortnightly, and it runs in the evening as opposed to the afternoon. And it's specifically for the ages of 15, slightly older, up to 30. There is a big gap for the older community, and I would love for there to be something there. So again, if you want to participate in making that happen, come and have a chat. I can help, or at least point you in the right direction. But Transform is really amazing, and they've got some really strong facilitators that are making that happen every fortnight. And they do really cool stuff, like this week, have our wonderful Marnie is doing a kōrero. They do cool stuff, and sometimes I'm like, wow, that's really, really cool. I wish I wasn't cisgendered, because then I would go, and then I'm like, oh, that's some privilege stuff up in there that I had to do some reflection on, as you can well imagine. So that's Transform. Okay, that's 1 minute each. Naming New Zealand, if you've ever had to navigate the quagmire that is trying to change your name or your gender on your legal documents, you will understand why Naming New Zealand is an incredibly valuable resource. They are a pool of knowledge and resources in and around how to do that. And they also are literally, they gather funds, they fundraise so that rangatahi, so young people can apply and say, hey, I'm trying to change my documents, please help me with how, and can you please help me pay for it? Because it's super expensive, right? Spendy. So they're really amazing. I have almost nothing to do with them. They run themselves. They're beautiful, beautiful people. The Wellington Binder Exchange, hands up if you know what a binder is. Good crowd. For those of you who don't know what a binder is, a binder is a item of clothing that you might wear if you didn't want, you know? Sometimes people think I'm wearing a binder. No, I'm just flat-chested. Yeah. Thank you, though. A few people have said, yeah, what are your pronouns? I'm like, they are she, her. I'm just really flat-chested and into androgynous haircuts. Thank you for asking me for my pronouns, though. So the Wellington Binary Exchange is completely run by volunteers, like all of our organisations. So to buy a binder, you have to order them online. They take weeks to get here. And there's some people around that do bring them in, but it costs between $50 and $70 typically to get yourself a binder. And that's not accessible for young people. I had one young person tell me the story. They got $5 pocket money a week and they legit saved it every week, and then they ordered a binder and then it got here and it did not fit. And so they went through the whole process again. It was deeply disappointing. And then there's stories about young people using bandages and damaging their ribs, or using tape and damaging their skin and their ribs. So having access to an item of clothing that makes you feel okay in your body and okay in your skin is actually really important. So the Wellington Binder Exchange literally source material and sewers, and with their powers combined, binders are made. And then we give binders to young people. We give them to them. There's no exchange of funds unless you want to help us fundraise. It's just about accessibility, which is really cool. Can I get like a yeah? Yeah. Yeah. Are you all being really polite because it's in a church? Is that okay? All right, I get it now. And the fifth organisation that I'd actually quite like to resurrect, there is a social group for a slightly older crowd that I'd really like to get back up and running called Social Fruits. But that's a whole other story. And I sometimes make the joke that it's not like I don't have enough to do. Just thought I'd add another group, you know. So that is Outer Spaces. And we actually really desperately need people to help with things like, if you know anyone who's really good with Xero software and accounting, we would love someone to just spend a few hours with us a month and help us with that. If you know someone who has a spare coffee table, we just need a coffee table. If you know someone who knows how to make posters look not bad, because mine are bad, if you know someone who can make good posters, who'd be willing to give us a few hours a month or something like that and help us update some of our posters and flyers and all that kind of stuff, please send them to me. I would love to update some of our stuff. If you know anyone who does web design or knows anything about how the internet works, can they teach me? I'm embarrassed at how little I know. Today I had some young people teaching me what Instagram was. It was a good time. They were very patient. So now I know at least what the app looks like, which I'm very proud of. Can I get an applause for that? Thank you. Okay, does anyone have any questions about Outer Spaces? Have I been relatively thorough? I don't have any posters left because they need updating. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. But I do have business cards, and I will leave them with you, because I need to leave here at 7 because I might get a puppy tonight. Oh. You respond to that. Ooh. So I'm going to pass the microphone back. Thank you so much for listening to me. I'd love to see you around. And I'm sure the Korero Prior was really, really wonderful. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Nice to actually meet you in person.
Now, you're here in two capacities, I believe. Would you like to talk about Inside Out standing there and then come over here and talk about gender minorities or something?
I can do that. Yeah. Sounds good. So like I mentioned before, I'm here sort of representing two different organisations. So I'll give you a little bit of information about each. Inside Out, Kōaro, is one of the organisations that I volunteer for. And so Inside Out is a youth-focused organisation for young people of minority genders and sexualities. And mainly it's focused on like kind of getting into schools and stuff like that. So a lot of the work that Inside Out does is doing workshops. So I'm doing kind of like gender and sexuality 101 workshops, some workplace facilitation and training along the same lines as well, generally for orgs that are kind of working with youth as well. There's Shift Hui, which happens every year. So that just happened in April, at the end of April, which is a hui for rainbow youth all around the country. It's relatively small, there's about 50 places, but it's generally a very kind of good environment for rainbow youth to come and just kind of spend time with each other in a safe space. And yeah, there's a bunch of different information about Inside Out on the website as well, which is insideout.org.nz. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to kind of point you towards as well is that Inside Out produces a lot of videos, and there's one series in particular called More Than Four, which is more than four being more than LGBT. And so that series is kind of talking about minorities within the rainbow community, so kind of what we've touched on already. Yeah, and they're kind of themed around different identities. Yeah, and as always, Inside Out is looking for volunteers. You don't have to be a youth to volunteer. Yeah, but if you would like to, and they're also there to offer information, so if you have any questions, feel free to email, I should say us, feel free to email us and we'll get back to you. And the other organisation, I'll just bring up my notes, the other organisation that I'm here on behalf of is Gender Minorities Aotearoa. It's a cross-cultural and transgender-led national organisation assisting transgender, intersex and takatāpui people in having choices about their lives and their bodies and in getting the things they need for well-being. So we've got a few different initiatives that are just starting up. We have Raw Sugar, which is a monthly social event, which is for people of all ages. So gender minorities is not age specific. It's for anyone who wants to access the services. And currently, Gender Minorities is located at 128 Abel Smith Street, which you might know as the Anarchist House, but downstairs of there, there's Auntie Dana's Op Shop, which is an amazing place, and all of the proceeds of the op shop go towards gender minorities and the work that we do. And Raw Sugar is also held in there as well. And it's really nice. There's an open fire, and there's usually there's heaps of food. There's movies usually, but, you know, things are changing. It just sort of depends. And the last couple of times I've hosted, and we've had a really good turnout, which has been awesome. And just recently as well, the Gender Centre will be operating from Fridays 10 till 3. So the Gender Centre is an initiative to kind of help people in a similar way to sort of Naming New Zealand, which has already been mentioned, just to provide information, peer support, name change forms. So we actually have forms there that people can take away with them, and we can kind of talk them through the process and stuff. Heaps of pamphlets and resources. Currently we're working on getting some workshops up and running as well, so similar kind of facilitation and consultation, more focused on the medical industry. Yeah, and other assistance. But yeah, generally the op shop is open, and if you ever want to drop in or check out the website, feel free to do so. It's genderminorities.com, I believe. Yeah, that's all I have to say, and thank you very much.
I'd just add that the Gender Minorities website is an extraordinary portal, so it has all the information for all over New Zealand. So if you're really interested in this area, I'd encourage you to visit the website. It's a very special place.
And as I found out sending emails, it's genderminorities, all one word, .com. Yep. So that film was More Than Four, the number four, is it?
Yeah, so it's a YouTube series. Yeah. So there's on YouTube, there are multiple videos. But yeah, the series is called More Than Four. There's a link to it through the Inside Out website. You should be able to find it. Or if you search, it's quite hard to find through YouTube, but if you search Inside Out on YouTube, then it should take you to the channel, and then you should be able to find it.
Yep.
Otherwise, through the Facebook page is probably a good way to find it as well.
And Inside Out is all one word too, insideout.org.nz. Yep. Do you remember when we first gave these email addresses to people and we wondered what all these dots meant? We soon found out that if you left the dot out, you just didn't get there. Yeah. So I mentioned getting to know people from Agenda years and years ago in Christchurch, but Alison, you're going to speak to us about that now.
Hi, I'm Alison McDiarmid. I'm a scientist. I transitioned 20 years ago at NIWA. And I've just been doing my own thing for the last 20 years, really. And it's just recently that I've wanted to become involved in the community as a whole. And so I was searching around for a group to get involved with, because in my transition and my experience, I certainly encountered all the sorts of issues that have been talked about tonight. I want to try and make a difference. And so I got in touch with Agenda New Zealand and became aware that they had no group operating in Wellington. And before I knew it, I was being asked to establish a new support group here. Now, it's got a history. I don't know too much about it. I haven't actually met anyone else from Agenda New Zealand yet, certainly not face-to-face. So I'm really exploring what Agenda New Zealand in Wellington can actually do, what space needs to be filled, and I'm really excited to be here this evening to see the breadth of support that's out here, and trying to figure out a way in which we can collectively address the spectrum and provide support and advice to the broader range of people who are involved in the sort of the whole trans scene. Certainly so far, my brief experience of being the nominated Agenda New Zealand person in Wellington, I've had a number of people contact me, but especially to the partners of adult trans people who are just starting to transition, and I'm not sure that that's a group that is well supported yet. So this includes partners and also children of people who are transitioning. So there's a broad range of support that's required, and I'm available for support. I'm also available to be quite keen to be involved in the more active, the activism areas. From my experience, there are several areas there which I think Agenda New Zealand and the other groups need to be involved in, and I know, I'm sure there's good work going on here now, but from my point of view is I know that we want to be counted, we want to be recognised and have some space in the next census, so working actively with Stats New Zealand is very important. If we're not counted, then it's very difficult to argue with government departments and others for the right funding to support things like wraparound mental, social and medical support for a national specialist centre in trans issues rather than if it's being diluted amongst 20 or so DHBs. Funding for surgery is certainly an important one in the trans community. And I know there's been some work going on in the space, but I'd be very keen to see that Agenda New Zealand works with all the other groups to push these things ahead. Yeah, that's really me. Thank you.
And the word agenda is not like you have at a meeting with an A at the end. It's A-G-E-N-D-E-R. And is it dot? What's your dot? What comes after? Yeah. Type in agenda. Yeah. Thank you. Outerspaces.org.nz. Thank you. Now, Jem is on the board of Rainbow Wellington, and she's going to finish off our share spot today. Thank you, Jem.
Kia ora whanau. It's great having Alison start up a branch of Agenda, and one of the things that I like to do at Rainbow Wellington is work with other groups. So, for example, we have worked with quite a lot with St Andrews over the last couple of years. We now have a regular observance of the Trans Day of Remembrance now every November. We also, it was more of a one-off, but we're keen to do more of the Trans Day of Visibility celebration as well, because it's good to celebrate the positives as well as remembering the negatives that we need to fight for. And fighting for stuff, that's actually quite a lot of what we do at Rainbow Wellington. We're one of the oldest rainbow lobby groups in the country, and based here in the capital, we do put a lot of time into lobbying central government, but we also have links with the Mayor's office as well, and there's some exciting things happening in the local community. And in fact, just picking up on Alison's words, I think, yeah, we need to work more as a coalition of groups a bit more into the future. Other things that Rainbow Wellington does, we organise regular social events, and we are picking up on the fact that perhaps in the 30 to 50 age bracket there's not a lot going on, so that's certainly on our to-do list to work with, again, with other groups to kind of, because to be honest, Rainbow Wellington has, being one of the oldest groups in the country, like these are literally the people who are fighting the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, building up to homosexual law reform in the 80s, that is that group. And so we have an older crowd, and there's lots of vibrant young groups in the city, and I think we're kind of missing that 30 to 50 age bracket, so that's something we'd like to work on in the future. We also, we have a little bit of money in our bank account, which we give out in grants, so we like to give out grants to other groups, and there are other sources of funding that we are aware of, so if you are a group needing funding, please come and see us, and we'll also point you in the direction of other sources of funds as well. So yeah, that's Rainbow Wellington. Thank you.
I'd like to express our gratitude to Jem here at St Andrews, because she has helped us identify the dates, like the Transgender Day of Remembrance, which is in November, and the Transgender Day of Visibility sometimes gets mixed up with the Pride celebrations, doesn't it? But that's been really, really helpful to us. And I'd like to say to all of you out there, if you're wanting to get a group together to support, or if you're in one of these organisations and you need rooms, particularly the smaller rooms, come and ask for free use of them, because we can support you by offering those kinds of meeting rooms. The larger ones are available as well, but it's really easy to get the smaller ones. And also, if you need support with submissions, we really value here at St Andrews hearing what bills are up for select committees and what submissions need making, and we'd be very happy to support you by making our own submission as well alongside yours. So we appreciate you networking with us and letting us know what's coming up. And we really work hard to be inclusive here, and we welcome everyone at our services. You may find that this is a community where you find friendship, and that may be all you want to come for. You don't particularly want to come for the belief side of church, but you want to come to a place where you're at home and it can be your place too. So do feel free to turn up here. And if you ever want to contact me for any kind of personal support, I may not know or be able to help you myself, but I might know someone who can. So do remember that, won't you? Whatever you you know, wherever you are in this issue, whether you're a friend, colleague, parent, person, or whether you're a friend, colleague, person who's going through changes and tricky things with this this area of issue in our society, we'd like to think that this is a place where you can come and be supported and feel at home. And even if you never come, I hope you know that this place is here in support of you. Okay. Now, you may have some questions, and so this is where, if you don't want your name to be recorded, your voice to be recorded, you could write a question down, or people may like to just ask, are there any questions that we can answer for you? I'll give you that one. Oh, look, we've told them so much stuff, they know everything now. Oh. Any questions?
So just why people are thinking, I don't know if everyone realises, but this church has been a safe rainbow space for a long time, and it's easy now to take for granted the fact that that rainbow flag is on the front. But the history that this place holds is precious and important.
I have a question for all the people who've spoken tonight. I'm very impressed with everything that's happening, and I can only think that all of you are spending an enormous amount of your time doing really good things, but it worries me that you're all doing it presumably in your spare time. And my question is there any funding, or are any of you working in a professional capacity where it's your job to do these things, or are you all completely volunteers? Is there anything in the public sector supporting these issues? Any jobs that are out there for people to do this work, or is it all your own spare time?
So there is small amounts of money available for the community, but the money is not consistent, and many of the groups are completely unfunded. So we all got a bit excited when the new government was elected, because both Labor and the Green Party promised that they would do things differently. So far there's no money. So all the groups, I think, at the moment are struggling, because most of us, the funding that National had put into the community has ended and there's no new money. So I think if you went round and talked to all of us, and I'll speak for my own organisation, we're under extraordinary stress at the moment. And it's come at a time where our work is increasing at a quantum that's just simply huge. So I'm hopeful that money will come. I'm not interested in project funding. We need sustainable funding. And we can look overseas to Australia, where for the last 20 years, groups have been funded, mostly at a state level, not at a federal level. But if you compare the difference of support and what's going on in Australia, there's certainly a lot going on here, but it's largely unfunded. And one of the things about lack of funding is then you're not supporting the work. So things like supervision and the training, the things that help to make things safe, aren't always going on as well. But if you were to add up the volunteer hours that is in this community, it is utterly extraordinary and would add up to a huge amount each year. Really, really important question. Get out there and jump on our MP's toes and see if we can loosen Grant's checkbook.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Sorry, can I just add something to that? Just while I'm thinking about it, I have a couple things to say. Inside Out does receive some funding, and that's fairly consistent, but it is a process of reapplying and constantly having evaluations as well. So when you do have that funding, you have to talk about how you've spent it, and then, you know, measure outcomes and things like that, which is a lot of work, and most of that is not paid as well. But there is never enough funding. Like, there should be way more. Gender Minorities Aotearoa currently is raising money, so we're having a fundraiser, which is on Facebook, so I'd just like to do a little plug for that. Yeah, so if you go on the Facebook page for Gender Minorities Aotearoa, all that work that I was talking about, the advocacy and the everything that Gender Minorities does, all that money is going towards that to actually pay people, because a lot of the time volunteers don't get any money at all. It is just, So, yeah, the fundraiser is a really good thing.
I was going to say before that the website, certainly Inside Out and Outer Spaces, you can donate on the websites, can't you? Yeah.
And I'm putting a lot of work and effort into making that really worthwhile. But I have 6 months left and I have so much more work to do. And I don't think anyone who works in the in the community doesn't feel overwhelmed at least once a week. At least twice a week I get emails from other organisations, from people in the community, from people who would love to collaborate on different projects, who would love some guidance, who need resources, and I have to say no because it's just me and I only have 40 hours and I'm already working 55. So I currently have funding for the rest of the year. I currently can exist. I don't know if they have enough money to pay me next year. So that's a precarious, that constant having to fundraise, that precarity, if that's a word, really undermines the work, and we all have so much work to do, and I wish that I could plan for the next 4 years and start saying yes to all these projects that people want to do that are really incredible, but right now I can't, and I know a lot of other organisations don't have the capacity. So sass your MPs.
Yes, and in our experience of getting funding in church circles, they will sometimes fund 2/3 of the salary the first year and 1/3 of the salary the next year, and then the third year you're meant to be on your own. So that's difficult.
Yeah, on that question of funding, I wonder if I could make a suggestion to people who are working in the space. The website patreon.com allows people to be sponsored by individuals who will put aside a monthly payment, and Patreon handles the credit card payments and so on, and that's available to anyone globally. I know a number of people who use Patreon to create blogs and to write books and that kind of thing. People who are activists in all sorts of different spaces, whether it's Black Lives Matter or that. It's a great resource for people who perhaps want to do work that needs funding but is perhaps difficult to find.
So did you say Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon? Any more?
Thank you.
So my question is really more around safe spaces and how we can create them, because I'm part of a church which, sorry, isn't this one. And we are going to have to be dealing with the whole mess around blessing of same-sex marriages, and all of that thing. Even as a... I'm gender diverse and I'm not straight either, but even given that, I'm still fairly conscious of my own level of ignorance, and I worry that discussions will be had or attempts will be made to create safer environments, but without people really knowing exactly how to go about that and risking creating further problems rather than actually solving them. I just say this because I've been in a couple of trans-friendly spaces in the past couple of years since I started questioning myself, and they're wonderful, wonderful places, but it seems to me that they are extremely rare and difficult to create. You need the right kind of people. So if people are, if organizations and churches and who, or even just, you know, community groups want to do that, because there's, I can only speak for myself, but I feel there's nothing really ever wrong with discussion and, or, you know, wanting to reach out and create places where people can be comfortable with themselves. What's the best way that people can go about doing that? Like, should people reach out to organizations, or, you know, where can they find resources for that, given how small the trans community is in the grand scheme of things?
I think a really good place to start is that maximum that comes from the disability community. So nothing about us without us. So any organisation that is thinking about that and involves the community, ideally it would be people who come to this congregation, and I know you already have beautifully that capacity. So those are the conversations. And I think that there's two things. There's about those of us with privilege taking responsibility, if we have privilege, to be open to that, but then not doing it without involving the community and the community voice. So those two things together. And sometimes you'll make mistakes and fall over, because when we're doing new things, that will happen. So having support, so if something goes wrong, you can hit a pause button and work out what's going wrong, and if necessary, apologise and move forward again. So maybe what we can do is put together a summary as a result of, like, an information sheet, so that absolutely if it's that particular area, then this person, but there's a whole lot of expertise and knowledge here tonight, so if we have that information in one place so that people can go to it.
That's right, and that's the purpose of the page that says email for resources. If you put your email there, if we can prepare that summary, we can send that to you.
Can I just add that I think the time is really ripe. I think there's a lot of goodwill out there. I think there is. Lots of institutions are wanting to step into the space and just need a helping hand. I think there's more goodwill and people wanting to do the right thing in the space than we sometimes think. There are lots of generous, inclusive people who want to, who've seen the activism on their TV screens, and sometimes in their workplaces, and sometimes in the community, and probably do want to step forward at this time.
Okay. We did advertise that we would finish at 7. I didn't think we would, because I thought the 6 groups would go over time, because they've got so much good stuff to tell you. But they were brilliant, weren't they? Could you please show your appreciation, first of all, to those groups that came and talked, the 6 groups, please. Yeah. And obviously, others of you have found Marnie to be a real rock and source of information and reality for us all. And she asked her last client if her last client would mind finishing early so that she could get her on time tonight. And I think that just kind of indicates the kind of devotion to this cause that Marnie shows. So if we could show our appreciation. And thank you all for coming on this terrible night, and I hope that you have found something of value to you. You no doubt will leave with as many questions perhaps as you walked in the door with, but do sign up there. We promise that we won't use your email for any nefarious things, and we won't sell it to Facebook or any advertising company. And we won't even use it to pretend that we've got more members in our congregation than we really have. But thank you very much for coming, and I hope that
we can. One of the advantages of you putting your name on the resources page would be that we would email you if we did something else like this again too. So thank you for coming very much, and have a good night.
And can we have a clap for Alia for stepping in and supporting me at last minute? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.